Thanks, Kristen. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time.
Coming up, the NFL season is off and running, and we'll talk about the appeal of football and whether news about concussions and criminal charges might turn people away.
First, we saw a lot of news about solar flares over the last couple of weeks. That led us to call up Phil Plait to bring us up to date on the sun and on the northern lights.
Phil is an astronomer, and he writes the Bad Astronomy blog. Phil, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
I have to tell you, part of the reason you're here, okay, let's not lie, a huge chunk of the reason you're here is that Rob and I really want to see the Northern Lights. and I want to hear that it's going to be a good year for it.
Well, it hasn't been a bad year for it. There have been quite a few beautiful displays of aurora if you're far enough north. For me, I live in Boulder, Colorado, and it just barely too south to see them unless something really spectacular happens.
Yeah, and as I understand it, so the Northern Lights, they are tied to the cycles of the sun and to solar flares. So can you unravel that a little bit and tell us what's going on with the sun and Northern Lights?
Yeah, that's exactly what's going on. The sun is basically a gigantic ball of gas. And inside the sun, where it's very hot, the atoms of this gas have their electrons stripped off. And what that means is that there are charged particles inside the sun moving up and down all the time. Now, you don't have to understand the science of this too carefully, but basically, when you have moving charged particles, you generate a magnetic field. And that's what's causing all of this stuff. As the particles move up towards the surface of the sun, these magnetic fields get very tangled up, and they're incredibly powerful. They store energy in them, and that energy can be released explosively. And because the sun is so huge, the amount of energy released can completely dwarf our entire arsenal of nuclear weapons on the Earth. When this happens, you get an explosion called a solar flare, and this blasts particles into space. They move across interplanetary space. They hit our magnetic field, which acts like a net and catches them, funnels them down to the north and south poles. They slam into our atmosphere and then light it up, kind of like a neon sign. So basically what you see on the ground is the Northern Lights. It has its origins deep inside the sun, which I think is pretty cool.
So what causes all the colors then with these particles?
Well, basically, it's just different stuff in the Earth's atmosphere. You can change the color of a neon sign. You can have it be red, green, all these different colors, depending on how much of each gas you put in the little glass tubes in the sign. And it's the same thing with the Earth's atmosphere. There's nitrogen and oxygen in our atmosphere, and these glow at different characteristic colors when they're slammed by these subatomic particles from the sun. So you can see mostly green. That's very common. But less commonly, you'll see red and purple and even pink, which is a mixture of some of the other colors that these molecules give off. I've never seen an aurora ever, really. So I can't describe what it looks like from my own personal experience. But from time-lapse photography and these beautiful photographs we see, they're completely spectacular, and I really want to see one.
Get in line, right? I don't know. I saw some green ones once, but I didn't have my contacts in, so they were a lot more blurry, and the people around me got a lot more out of it than I did. So I don't know. I'm still holding out hope that they will come back even greater than before. And so to that end, now I have heard that the sun moves in solar cycles, and that what we are in right now is a big solar cycle year, which means more solar flares. Is that true?
Yes, kind of. As always, the reality is a little more complicated. The sun does have a cycle to it where the magnetic field gets stronger and weaker over time, and we're about to hit the peak of that. This happens every 11 years. It happened back in 2002, 2003, something like that. It's happening now, and it's a fairly weak maximum right now, and the sun's acting a little oddly. It's different every time. So this isn't a huge shock, but it's interesting that it's not quite as strong as it was last time when it was just blasting out flares constantly. Right now, we're just getting a handful, and they're not necessarily that powerful. And so we'll see what happens over the next year or so as the sun figures out what exactly it's doing.
And I think you wrote about that some of these eruptions actually leave holes in the sun's corona. How long do they stay there?
Yeah, the sun has essentially what you can think of as an atmosphere. It's an extremely thin gas that surrounds it and extends out for millions of miles, in fact. And that's where a lot of these phenomena originate from. And if you can't see the corona very well using visible light. But if you use ultraviolet and X-rays, and we do have satellites that can see in those wavelengths, the corona becomes very obvious. And there are parts of it that have these holes in it. And it's kind of weird. It's almost as if the sun's atmosphere just weren't there in those spots. And those holes are where a lot of these particles stream away from. And they come and go over a matter of hours, days, weeks, things like that. And we don't really understand what causes them. The sun is fantastically complex. The physics is mind-blowing. And so we're still trying to figure that stuff out, which is why NASA launches all these fantastic satellites so that we can understand it. I mean, this is the source of our light and heat and all life on Earth. And so the sun is something we really need to understand better.
Now, in terms of, I guess, the magnetic polarity of the sun, do I have this right? The sun is going to reverse its polarity?
Yes, and it's not nearly as scary as it sounds.
Yeah, it sounds pretty scary.
Every 11 years, I know. There's a lot of conspiracy theories you can find online about this because it sounds like, you know, the sun's going to flip over or something like that. It's nothing like that. If you've ever taken a bar magnet in school and put a piece of paper on it and sprinkled iron filings on it, the iron filings will follow the magnetic field of the bar magnet, and there's a north and a south pole. And it turns out that you can flip those poles without physically flipping a magnet, and the sun does this every 11 years at the peak of its cycle. So we're going through that now. It'll probably flip over in the next few months. And on Earth, you wouldn't even notice it, really. I mean, it's just what it does all the time. So this isn't scary. It's actually a pretty cool physical phenomenon that, again, is not completely understood. This is very fierce physics, and we're still trying to figure it out. But it all leads toward understanding the sun better and how it interacts with the Earth. And since these phenomena like solar flares and these coronal mass ejections, a huge storm similar to flares, these can affect our satellites, these can affect our power grid, and so it's worth knowing more about them because they do have an effect on us here. And the more we know about them, the more we can protect ourselves against them.
Well, right. We've heard about solar flares, people being worried about solar storms affecting communications. And I've seen, you know, some articles where people are pretty worried about that kind of thing. Have we ever seen it come to pass like that, where the sun just pumps out so much energy that it really does interfere with the Earth's communication systems?
Actually, yes. The very first solar flare ever seen was in 1859, so 150 years ago, and it actually had physical effects on the Earth. Telegraphs were able to be used without batteries because of electricity flowing through the wires from this flare, all kinds of crazy effects. And in more modern times, in 1989, a large solar storm actually induced so much current, so much electricity flowing in the Earth's surface, that it overloaded the power grid in North America, and Canada had a brownout for several hours in the middle of March. So this can happen. We can protect ourselves from it by being aware of it, basically. The power companies could put in more overflow capacity for current in their system. The problem is that's hugely expensive, and this is a relatively rare event. My concern is that it's rare, but it's not never. It happened 20 years ago, and it happened 150 years ago, and it could happen again. And we should be taking this more seriously.
So, Phil, can we predict this stuff, or is it just kind of like weather on Earth? It's kind of a best guess kind of scenario.
Actually, it is a lot like weather on Earth. You can get a little bit of warning about some of this stuff. This activity is associated with sunspots, and when a sunspot grows very rapidly and has a very complex magnetic field, it's a fair bet that it's going to be something that's going to shoot out some solar storms. And it's also a little bit like climate. We can predict sort of, you know, next year in the winter it'll be cold, and next year in the summer it'll be hot. In the solar cycle, we know that it peaks and wanes over time. But for a specific event like this, it's extremely difficult to predict. We have to understand more. And so the more observations, the more people we have doing this stuff, the better. And happily, NASA and other organizations take it seriously.
Now, as the sun continues to grow older and to expand, are the flares that we've been talking about, are they going to get bigger as time goes on? And maybe, I guess this wouldn't be in our lifetimes, but might there be incredible, spectacular northern lights that I will not see, but maybe my great-great-great-grandchildren will?
I don't think so. Stars are very magnetically active when they're very young because they spin more quickly, and that spin helps power the magnetic field. As time goes on, the sun is actually slowing its spin very gradually, and the kind of changes you're talking about are over tens or hundreds of millions of years. So I don't think there's any difference you're going to see today versus, like, you know, 2 million A.D. So I don't think you have to worry about that.
All right, I won't mark my calendar then to look out for that. Well, I want to ask you, we're going toward the autumnal equinox. And I wonder, you know, to rely a bit on the astronomy side here, what are things that you're looking forward to seeing in the night sky as the constellations move, or as, you know, we move?
Well, nights are getting longer here in the Northern Hemisphere, so it's a better time for astronomy in general, just because you can go out earlier. Jupiter is going to start making its way into the night sky here in a couple of months. That's going to be nice. Saturn's up. Orion is up earlier. So there are a lot of really beautiful things to see in the sky. If there's a local astronomy club, and you can find those online, just type in local astronomy club and see what it tells you. A lot of them will have star parties where you can go out and look through their telescopes, and that is never a bad time. That's always amazing to be able to see these things with your own eyes. So I strongly urge people to do that.
And did you happen to catch the Perseids when they were in our neck of the woods?
I always miss the Perseids. It's either cloudy or, in this case, I was in Australia, which is not the best place to see them from. But that's always good, too. There are lots and lots of meteor showers all the time. The next big one would probably be the Leonids in November and the Geminids in December. Although you guys are in Wisconsin, which is probably not practical to go out all night long in the winter.
It's possible.
But again, you know, look up what meteor showers are going on, and sometimes it's worth going out and looking, because, you know, in a couple of hours you can see a dozen, two dozen meteors, and that's really something.
So you were down in Australia. I'm curious, what was it like to see, I guess, the whole different constellation when you looked up at the sky? As an astronomer, I imagine you sort of orient yourself based on what you see up there at night. What was it like being in Australia?
It was totally freaky. We live on this big ball, which is opaque, and when you go to the other hemisphere, there are stars down there that you can't see up here and vice versa. And I've been there before, but the weather wasn't that great, so I didn't see too many stars. But this time it was clear every night. So to see Orion upside down and the Southern Cross and even familiar constellations like Scorpius and Sagittarius, like totally overhead, almost straight up as opposed to on the horizon, was very strange. And yeah, I mean, it's like walking outside and all of a sudden you realize the streets are all backwards. You know, you can imagine how hard that would be to try to navigate.
Yeah.
So just walking outside and seeing unfamiliar stars in the sky, that's really weird.
Yeah. So is it something that you kind of have to pinch yourself and say, yeah, I'm still on planet Earth, I guess?
Yeah, and it's spectacular to be able to see, you know, Alpha Centauri, which is the nearest star to the sun, but is completely invisible from up here in the United States, basically. That's fantastic. It's just knowing that. Just knowing it, just seeing that bright star and thinking, that's it. That's the closest star we can see. And right next to it is the Southern Cross and all these other fantastic constellations, which seem very exotic to us. But, of course, down there, they're like, oh, yeah, what do you think? It's wonderful. And I can't wait to be able to get down to the Southern Hemisphere again.
Excellent. Well, you're making me want to do the same. Phil, thank you so much for coming on and talking today.
Thank you.
That was astronomer Phil Plait. You can follow his work at the Bad Astronomy blog.